biography of Sanatana Goswami, some women did not get it. So, Gaurishankar, you can come forward. It's not that you're here to pick it. So, during the lunch break, there was a question raised about how we should take, well, two questions by two separate persons. How we should take the statements made by these exalted devotees where they're deprecating themselves. They're putting themselves down. We should take it as an exhibition of the light of humility, which is a sign of their greatness. To do differently, to join with them in being the judges of their position, is a mistake. So then how should we look at this business of the hierarchy of one who's receiving Krishna's mercy, or the hierarchy of devotees? I have a two-part answer for that. One part is, as a rule of thumb, as a general rule, it's always appropriate to glorify a devotee. However, the business of comparing one devotee with another devotee can be risky business, because indirectly, what might be in one's mind is to say, this devotee is bad because. You're not saying this devotee is bad because, you're saying this devotee is good, but in comparing this one is better, you're putting the other one down indirectly. And I'll share with you a discussion I had not so long ago with Radhanath Maharaj, where we were discussing the tendency in neophyte devotees to make comparison between this sannyasi, this guru and that guru, and the business of saying this sannyasi is better. It's a whole different thing if one says, this particular person, they're such a wonderful devotee because, see, praising them, appreciating that particular devotee. But the other business, it's offensive. It can easily be offensive. So we should be very cautious about making offenses. Now, if it's risky business to do this type of thing, what's going on here in Brihad Bhagavatamrita? For the most part, in a very expert way, the devotees are speaking their own words of humility, just like supposing we're in the presence of an exalted devotee. Prabhupada would once say, I'm not at all a devotee. I'm trying to be a devotee. Or another example is in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami speaks about himself, where he says that I'm lower than the worm and stool. One who takes my name will go to hell. His name is Krishna Das. So he's expressing his mood of humility, and it's something that he genuinely feels. So if we say, yeah, that Krishna Das, he's lower than a worm in stool. He even said it himself. And if you just even think of that devotee, Krishna Das, and say his name, you'll go to hell. He's so bad. So that's obviously Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami is not like that. And the principle should also be applied to someone else who may say in their mood of humility some remark about themselves that expresses their humility. Now, in their expression of humility, they may say, I'm not being humble, I'm just being honest. And as far as they're concerned, they're being honest. I'm fallen. Prabhupada did the deity installation of Rukmini Dwarkadish. And Prabhupada spoke with his voice trembling, practically he was crying. I'm rotten. I am fallen. I am puffed up. But my dear Lord, please, you kindly accept this offering. So Prabhupada wasn't just saying that for our benefit. He was feeling that, genuinely feeling that emotion, and thinking of himself in that way. So we don't say, yeah, Swamiji even admitted it. He's rotten, fallen, and puffed up. This is humility. So we should take the expressions of these great devotees as expressions of their humility. And they would say, no, it's not that I'm being humble, I'm just being honest. I'm not qualified in so many ways. Let me tell you how I'm not qualified. But it's not someone else saying, yeah, he's not qualified. Let me tell you all the ways that he is not qualified. They're speaking about themselves. As I said at the very beginning, we're getting a snapshot of the mind of great devotees, how they feel about themselves and their relationship with Krishna. We're getting a feeling of their feelings of humility. So one other comment in this whole business is, according to Rupa Goswami and his teachings about the position of a Madhyama Adhikari, the distinction between a Madhyama, a middle stage devotee, midway in the progress towards perfection, and a beginning stage of Kanishtha Adhikari, is the Madhyama Adhikari, the Kanishtha Adhikari is unable to make distinctions between who is more advanced and who is less advanced. In fact, they usually get it backwards. That's the Kanishtha Adhikari. But a Madhyama Adhikari has a duty to make such distinctions. So what we're hearing here is not Madhyama Adhikaris, but very elevated devotees talking amongst themselves. Narada speaking with Lord Brahma, Lord Narada speaking. Especially today, we're going to hear some things where Lord Shiva is deprecating himself. And that we should be very, very careful with this business of making... He's speaking about himself. And so, it's true that there is a transcendental hierarchy, but for us to be judges of elevated persons, we don't have the qualification to do that. We shouldn't be doing that. We should be very careful. They're expressing their views of humility, particularly in their regard to other Vaishnavas. I'll give one example that's going to come towards the end, where Prahlad compares himself to Hanuman and says, I just meditate, he does service. Prahlad achieved perfection by fixing his mind upon the Supreme Lord. And Hanuman achieved perfection in these nine processes of bhakti by rendering service. But it's not that Prahlad didn't do any service. And in a moment's opportunity, he was doing service. He was preaching Krishna consciousness. He was definitely doing service. And is still doing service. But he says about himself, I'm disqualified. I just meditate upon the Lord sometimes when I'm having difficulty. That's his humility. But if you really want to know someone who's great, the real greatness is not just you think about the Lord, but you please him with the service that you render. That's Hanuman. Anyway, so it's an important and a very delicate subject matter of how to address ourselves to these expressions of humility. It's more that we should take it as lessons in how to be humble and how to be ready for full disclosure about our shortcomings and our, you know, whatever it is that we have that's less than ideal in the front of another great devotee like Narada. Okay, so I wanted to begin where we left off this morning, and I'm going to do this a little bit differently. Some sections I'm just going to read passages right from the text itself. But where we ended up was with Narada in Shivaloka, and Lord Shiva is indicating that those who are the greater recipients of the mercy of the Lord are the residents of Vaikuntha. Brahma is indicating to Narada that he should go to Shivaloka. We started speaking about the different realms of Lord Shiva from the spiritual world in Vaikuntha as Sankarshan, Sadashiva, then Rudra or Shambhu in Shivaloka, and then Shiva who situated in Kailash. So that's what this is. Brahma finishes giving this instruction, and then Maharaj Parikshit turns to his mother, or continues narrating to his mother, saying, hearing this, Narada stood up, and he was ready to take off for Kailash. And Brahma checked him. And instead of, he said, basically he's going to tell him, instead of going to Kailash, you should go to Shivaloka, and here's why. Kuvera once earned the gratitude of Lord Shiva by devotedly worshipping him. From then on, within this universe, Lord Shiva has submitted to Kuvera's authority on Kuvera's Mount Kailash. There's no explanation, but Mount Kailash is like a suburb of Kuvera's residence. So Kuvera worshipped Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva was very pleased with Kuvera's worship. So Lord Shiva agreed to submit to Kuvera and be subordinate to him. And so Kuvera said, very well, I'll give you a place you can live in the suburbs. And it's called Kailash. So it's actually the property of Kuvera. It was on Kailash that Brahma saw the sons of Kuvera, Nala Kuvera and Manigriva, when they were doing their business, their young girls, because he went to visit Lord Shiva, and there was the sons of Kuvera hanging out, doing their thing. So he then explains that this Lord Shiva, who resides in Kailash, is exhibiting but a small fraction of his opulences, of Lord Shiva's opulences. If you want to see the fullness of Lord Shiva's opulences, then you need to go to this other place, Shiva Loka, that's beyond the universe. So then he explains, this is right in the text itself, Brahma says that you must have studied this, you're very studious, Narada, you've read so many things. So you must have read in the Vayu Purana, where it describes all what I'm about to tell you. There is an abode of Lord Mahadev who lives outside of the seven coverings of this universe. He describes that abode in this way. Eternal and full of happiness, that abode is absolutely real. In other words, it's not destroyed at the time of annihilation. It can be attained by the best of Lord Shiva's servants. There, Lord Shiva, served by the most excellent regalia, reveals himself in his full splendor, surrounded by companions who share opulence and beauty equal to his. It's like a Vaikuntha planet, but it's not. In the Vaikuntha planet, the residents of Vaikuntha also exhibit opulences of Lord Narayan. So in Shivaloka, they exhibit opulences like Lord Shiva. But they're not. They're his servants. As his personal deity, he worships Lord Sankarshan, who is none different from himself. What amazing wonders does Lord Shiva in this manifestation not display? And he says, you can go there, Narada. You can do it. You have the power, you can travel wherever you like. You're Krishna's pure devotee, and he's given you this ability, so I recommend that you go right away. And the chapter ends with Narada playing at his veena, heading off towards Shivaloka, chanting, Shiva Krishna, Shiva Krishna is important. He's in this mood that Lord Shiva, this personality residing in Shivaloka, is not different than Krishna. He goes by a different name, but he has that conception. So that conception Lord Shiva refutes, absolutely refutes. So when he reaches, chapter 3 begins with Narada reaching Shivaloka, and Lord Shiva has just finished his puja of Lord Sankarshan. And Lord Sankarshan retires, and he starts claiming the glories, just as he heard it from Lord Brahma. And during this worship of Lord Sankarshan, Lord Shiva is in a state of ecstasy. As we go along in each of these progressive visits, the persons are not just worshiping, but they're totally absorbed. And Lord Shiva when he gets absorbed, he goes wild. He just starts dancing and carrying on. And he was oblivious to Narada's presence, dancing like a madman. And Narada approached him and tried to touch his feet, and started glorifying him in the same way he heard from Brahma. And it took a while for Lord Shiva to even recognize him. And he couldn't quite understand what he was saying. He just said, Narada, what is it that you're saying here? So it started bringing Lord Shiva around. They sat down together in a kusa grass mat, and his virasana, and they all, Lord Shiva had some of his associates sitting around Narada. They wanted to respect Narada. Narada wanted to offer his obeisances to Lord Shiva, but it didn't seem appropriate the way that they were respecting him. And so he just started chanting the six syllable Shiva mantra that's found in the Rig Veda, and all that's commented in the purport by Sanatana Goswami is it starts Namaste. It doesn't give the mantra. So he's chanting this six syllable Shiva mantra, and then he starts glorifying Lord Shiva, offering praises that he is the supreme controller of the whole universe, and in so many ways describing how Krishna has bestowed his mercy upon him. And then Brahma regains external consciousness, and with his hands he covers the mouth of Narada. He says, stop this. I am not the Lord of the universe. And I'm not even an object of Krishna's mercy. He says, I'm just a poor soul who's hankering for the favor of the servants of his servants. This is Lord Shiva's mood. So Narada's stunned. He thinks maybe he's made an offense, because Lord Shiva was angry. Everybody knows you don't get Lord Shiva angry. Not a good thing to do. So he started speaking very softly. And he got off the thing of Lord Shiva and Lord Krishna equal, but started glorifying in a different way. And first he said something that's undeniably true. He said, you understand the confidential glories of the Supreme Lord, and you're very, very expert in presenting these confidential glories of the Supreme Lord, and by that expertise you have brought so many persons to the position of devotional service. Which is true. And then he says that it's a well-known thing, it's a well-known fact amongst the Vaishnavas and Krishna himself that you're very, very dear to them. And then he says, you're so dear that even Krishna worshipped you for getting a benediction. And that was too much for Lord Shiva to hear. That what he's referring to, it comes up later, but there's a couple of them. Once Lord Krishna worshipped Lord Shiva, actually this is one, I'm jumping ahead here, but he refers to it later. Lord Shiva says, when Krishna did that, what does it mean when a superior comes before a subordinate and the superior worships the subordinate? He said, he was mad with me. He was so mad with me that he showed his anger by taking this reverse role. You're so arrogant. Okay, I'll worship you. And ask for a benediction. I'd like a son who's good. Krishna has no such material interest in worshiping me. I was so embarrassed. Then there's another reference, maybe some of you who took part in the presentation of the glories of Maharaj Amrish will remember this one, but for those of you that didn't, there's another place where Shiva was requested by Krishna for some benediction. And Lord Shiva, as a benediction, gave him the Sudarshan Chakra. It's mentioned in one of the Puranas. So it turns out that in the glories of Maharaj Amrish, Maharaj Amrish explained how that happened. What he explains is when to stop Sudarshan Chakra from attacking Durvas Muni, Maharaj Amrish offered prayers to Sudarshan Chakra and said that Sudarshan, you have created the whole cosmic manifestation. We don't think of Sudarshan Chakra as creating the whole cosmic manifestation. Sudarshan Chakra does other things, like cuts, but creating. So what is the Sudarshan Chakra creating? What's that reference? Sudarshan Chakra is Sudarshan. He also says, you are that glance of the Supreme Lord which created the cosmic creation. So Sudarshan, or the glance of the Supreme Lord, we know in Brahma Samhita is Shambhu. Those of you that have studied Brahma Samhita, the glance of Mahavishnu as he glances over Pradhan, that glance is carried by Shambhu or is Shambhu. So the glance, when contacting Pradhan, what happens? It becomes transformed and is known as Shiva. Shiva and his consort, Goddess Devi, or Mahamaya, or Durga, or by different names. So that Shiva is nothing other than the glance of the Supreme Lord, or in his original state, Shambhu. So when Lord Shiva gives the benediction, what's he doing? He's returning that which actually, not what was given to him, but actually is him. It's something like, I gave this example during this other seminar. It's like a parent giving some allowance to their child, and the child giving the allowance back to the parent as a gift. Where did the child get the money? From their parent. But out of their love for their parent, they may give something back in the form of a gift. So it's an exchange of love, but it's actually the property of the parent. So this gift of Lord Shiva, of Sudarshan Chakra, it's actually the Lord's eternal paraphernalia, but it's a pastime of exchanging a loving relation. But what Lord Shiva says to Narada is, just see my arrogance. He covered his mouth. Don't even speak of this again. I'm too embarrassed. Then he says that, don't you know this, that the Lord, when he engages in activities with his devotees, he's simply engaging in leelas with them. He's showing the whole world his supreme opulence. And one of his opulence is, he didn't just reject me for this arrogance of mine. This is one of his opulences. So Narada says, we know that you're not an offender. I know that you're not an offender. And knowledgeable people know that you're never an offender. And the Supreme Lord, he doesn't take it that way either. Even if you do something that seems to an ordinary inspection that you've done something bad, or one of the persons who you've given a benediction to has done something bad, it's not that you're offensive. And the Lord is actually pleased with you. Then he gives a number of examples. So this is story time. One of the examples he gives is Bana, the story of Banasura. So in the story of Banasura, he was the father of Kusha, and one of Krishna's grandchildren, Aniruddha, became the husband of Usha. So here's the story. It's described in the 10th canto, and it's also in Krishna book. So this becomes important later when we talk about Prahlad, so I'm going to tell the whole thing. Bana was one of Bali Maharaj's 100 sons. And he was the eldest of Bali Maharaj's sons. And who, Bali Maharaj is the son, or is in the line of Prahlad Maharaj. He's one of the descendants of Prahlad Maharaj. Bali, king of the Daityas. So Bana was one of his sons. So then he gets the name Bana Asura, because he was born in the family of Asuras. So Bana had this he was worshipping Lord Shiva, and he had many arms, and with his many arms he was playing many musical instruments to Lord Shiva's dance. And Lord Shiva liked the whole exchange so much, he gave him a benediction, anything that you might want. So Bana's request was that he would like to be his guard outside his palace. I just want to serve you. Nice. And as time passed, Bana had one daughter whose name was Usha. And after some time, when Usha was an adult young lady, she started having these dreams at night. And in dreams at night, one paramour would appear in her dreams, and they would have some affairs together. And this went on for night after night after night. And then one night, this paramour didn't show up in her dreams, and she was beside herself with anxiety. So she had one very close friend whose name was Chitraleka. And Chitraleka had some very special abilities. One thing, she was a kind of a mystic artist. So Chitraleka pried it out of her friend. Usha, what's wrong? Don't tell anybody. But this is what's been going on. So she said, I'll help you find him. I'll make paintings and drawings. And then you can identify who that person is. She made many drawings of Gandharvas and members of the Yadu dynasty and different important personalities. And finally, when she made a picture of Usha, of Aniruddha, that was it. Usha was silent. So Chitraleka knew, that's him. So she said, I'll bring him right here. With her mystic powers, she flew in the sky and went right to Dwarka and captured with her mystic powers Aniruddha and brought him directly to the side of Usha. And to the side of Usha meant in the inner chambers. Now, houses in palaces and houses of aristocratic people were constructed in such a way that there was an outer chamber where men would reside and an inner chamber where women only would reside. So he went, went crashing into the room, and there was Aniruddha, whoops, with Usha. And so the whole army came in, tried to, and Aniruddha took his club and started killing so many warriors, but Bana had mystic powers, and he, with his Naga Pashu ropes, he tied him up and put him in prison. And for months, Aniruddha was in Bana's prison. So then Narada instigated things by going and telling in Dwarka, do you know where Aniruddha is? I know where Aniruddha is. Where is he? He's in prison with Banasura. So they got armies together and went to confront Banasura to get Aniruddha back. And so a big battle ensued where Bana fought with Satyaki, and Bana's son fought with Samba, And then Lord Shiva and Kartikeya, they got into the action because they're just right next door. He's the gatekeeper. So Lord Shiva came out and big battle. And the Yadavas were very, very fierce warriors, so they started defeating all of Banasura's army. And Balaram was also there with his club. Pradumna was there and he smashed Kartikeya. And so Bana came running forward and personally challenged Krishna. It gets real exciting. So Bana's mother knew he's no match for Krishna. So she came running out into the battlefield naked, stood right in front of Krishna.
Krishna looked the other way.
And Bana took the opportunity to run off the battlefield. And then he got Lord Shiva to send his Shivajwara weapon to attack Krishna. So Krishna got his Vishnujwara weapon and repulsed the Shivajwara weapon. And the Shivajwara personified came before Krishna and offered prayers and surrendered to Krishna. So this is an example that's going to come up later where Krishna, Shiva fights Krishna. So after this, Bana is dauntless. He came back out again, started fighting with Krishna. And the first thing that Krishna did, he had 1,000 arms. He cut off all of them with his Sudarshan Chakra, except for four. He had a four-armed Banasura form. And then Lord Shiva came and pleaded with Krishna to please spare him. So it's very, this is important, this whole narration. Krishna said, very well, not only I'll spare him, but I'll grant him immortality, and he'll live a life of fearlessness, and he'll become one of your eternal associates in this four-armed form. Just like that. So, back to our Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Narada is saying to Lord Shiva, although there you have some followers that are a little problematic, Krishna is very kind upon you. Unlike when Lord Brahma gave his benedictions to Ranikashipu and Ravana, the Supreme Lord really got on his case. But when with you, he likes you so much. He just gave them this special favors, even they were so bad. Just because of you, because of your plea on their behalf. He favors you so much. And then he gave another example. He said, when you give benedictions, you do so in a very clever way. You do so where there's always some loophole. And he gave several examples, which I'm going to describe. One of those examples was with Gargya. Who's Gargya? It's mentioned in the purports here. There's a description from the Harivamsa where Gargya is the son of, well, there's two different accounts. Son of Garga, who's a student of Bharadwaj Muni. Even a student of the son of Bharadwaj Muni. So he's a Brahmana. And he was a contemporary of Krishna. So, for some reason, Gargya was being criticized by his brother-in-law. His brother-in-law said, "You're a eunuch." And this criticism, cynical criticism, got back to the Yadavas and they were laughing about it. They made fun of him, which is a nice thing to do. So he became very angry with Yadavas and he wanted revenge. He was a Brahmana who wanted revenge. So he went into the forest and he underwent austerities for 12 years worshipping Lord Shiva. It says that he lived on eating powdered iron as his food. I guess he got real fortified. And after 12 years of austerity, Lord Shiva appeared and offered him whatever benediction he wanted. And what he wanted as a benediction was the ability to This reference is from the Vishnu Purana. He wanted the ability to have a son that could terrorize the Yadavas. So Lord Shiva gave him that benediction. And after some time, the members of the Yavana race, the king of the Yavanas was unable to produce a child, so he asked Gargya to produce a child with his wife, the queen, and so he produced a child named Kaliyavana. So Kaliyavana appears in Krishna's pastimes, where Krishna was on the 18th time that Jarasandha attacked Mathura. At the same time, Jarasandha was attacking, or just before actually, Jarasandha came to attack for the 18th time, Kaliyavana was attacking. And Kaliyavana, it's described in the Bhagavatam that he had the terror of Lord Shiva at the time of devastation. He was a very pitiful personality and extremely powerful. So when he started attacking Mathura, he consulted with Balaram. This person is very determined and very dangerous. So you stay here and hold off the armies of Kaliyavana, and I'm going to build Dwaraka. It's at that time he arranged for Vishvakarma to build Dwaraka within the ocean. And by mystic power, he transferred all the members of the Yadu clan to Dwaraka, got them situated very nicely, and came back to resume the battle in Mathura. It doesn't say how long it took. Apparently it didn't take that long because the whole armies were situated outside. And then Krishna went outside the fort in Mathura without any weapons. So some of you may know this story. It's a wonderful story. So Kaliyavana also dropped his weapons and he came rushing towards Krishna to just smash him. And Krishna, in his pastime as Ranchor, he eluded Kaliyavana just some steps ahead of him. And Kaliyavana was insulting him and name-calling him, and Krishna just looked over his shoulder and kept going faster and faster than Kaliyavana could move. Because Krishna had a plan. He wanted one of his devotees to take care of Kaliyavana, get the credit for killing him. So he went into a cave where Muchakunda was. And he hid himself behind Muchakunda, and Kaliyavana saw his sleeping body and thought, Krishna, you're just a coward. He kicked him. But it wasn't Krishna, it was Muchakunda. And Muchakunda had this benediction from the devas that he had fought for many, 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 many days of battle against the demons. And when they had a replacement general for him, he got the reprieve that anything he wanted, he just wanted a long sleep with nobody bothering him. And if anybody bothered him, awoke him prematurely, just by his glance over them, they would instantly burn to ashes. So that's what happened to Kaliyavana, incinerated. So Shiva gave a benediction to Gargya that had a loophole. It was to harass the Yadavas, but It was his own demise. Then he gives another example. Another example is Jayadrath. How many of you know who Jayadrath is? Jayadrath appears in Mahabharata. He's mentioned in Bhagavad Gita as one of the warriors on the Kauravas' side. So the story behind Jayadrath is that he was the king of what today is now Pakistan, the Sindh side, the northwestern side of Pakistan. So we get some idea of he's the king of that territory, what kind of personality he had, Jayadrath. He was present at Draupadi Swayambar, and he lost. So he was a Kshatriya and he wanted to get back because he lost. Besides, from where he was from, he just had. And he had this fascination for Draupadi. So on the day that he was to be married, he was traveling to where the marriage was to take place, and he saw Draupadi in the forest. It was during the time when the Pandavas were in exile. So he, through some messenger, he sent some licentious messages to Draupadi. Come on over my side and enjoy for a while. And so she rejected his proposals, and several times he did this, and each time she just was completely disgusted with this Jayadrath personality. And he's a king, and he's getting rejected by a woman that he's trying to seduce. So on one given occasion, he saw her and forcibly tried to put her on his chariot, and she punched him. Draupadi was tough. Sako! And knocked him over. Big warrior. He recovered and forcibly put her on the chariot again, and off he went into the distance. And one sage saw this whole thing happening. Domya Muni. So he followed for some time, and he informed the Pandavas what had happened to Draupadi. So that's all was needed. The Pandavas got their armies together and they went chasing after Jayadrath. And when they captured him, the army was totally demolished. The Pandavas were really... Anyway, they demolished the army, and then Bhima got a hold of Jayadrath and started beating him to within an inch of his life. And humiliated completely, cutting off all his hair except a few pieces, and brought him before Yudhisthira, ready to finish him off. And Yudhisthira said to spare him, that as long as he surrendered to Yudhisthira, that would be enough. So Jayadrath was released, and Jayadrath wanted to get back once again. So he went to the Gangotri, and he underwent very, very severe austerities for a long time. And he was granted a benediction by Lord Shiva. So his benediction was he wanted to defeat all the Pandavas, at least one at a time. And so that benediction was granted. So here he was, powerful, with Lord Shiva's benediction. And within the Kurukshetra battle, when Abhimanyu was being attacked by 11 generals, the Pandavas came to know, so they came to protect Abhimanyu, and Jayadrath invoked this benediction of Lord Shiva and repelled the Pandavas. And so Arjuna took a vow, I'm going to kill Jayadrath. And when a king takes a vow, that's it. So Jayadrath got word that Arjuna had taken this vow. So Jayadrath asked the Kauravas, is it okay if I leave the battlefield? And they said, no, in fact, you should fight Arjuna tomorrow. So when the battle between Arjuna and Jayadrath took place, Krishna informed Arjuna that along with his benediction of Lord Shiva was the benediction that whoever killed him when his head hit the ground, not whoever killed him, but when the head hit the ground, whoever was responsible for that, his head hitting the ground, their head would break into many pieces. So when Jayadrath was killed, the head was somehow transported to where the father of Jayadrath was, and he undergoing penances, and the head of his son fell in his lap, and with disgust he threw the lap off his head, and his head smashed into many pieces. So there's another example of Narada saying that, Lord Shiva, when you give benedictions, there's always loopholes in these benedictions you give, deliberately designed that way. And he gives one more. And the one more is the example of Sudakshina. Sudakshina. Does anybody know who Sudakshina is? Mystery, right? You know? Yeah, he's the son of the king of Kashi. So when Krishna went to Kashi to fight with Pondraka, Kashi was his brother. They were cohorts in crime. So when Krishna came and he defeated both Pondraka, he also defeated Kashi, and somehow the head of Kashi went flying in the sky and ended up right in his palace, in the royal palace. And so Sudakshina, the son of Kashi, wanted to take revenge for the death of his father. So he went someplace to execute austerities to satisfy Lord Shiva, to get the benediction that he could defeat the one who had killed his father. Well, he wanted from Shiva the means by which. So Lord Shiva said, the means by which you can try for this is you can use black magic, and through the means of black magic you can perform this Dakshina Yajna fire with black magic rituals. So after he did that for some time, a big fiery demon came out of the sacrifice, and he was carrying a fiery trident, and Sudakshina pointed this demon the direction of Dwaraka and said, go kill Krishna. So he went to kill Krishna in Dwaraka, and Krishna sent Sudarshan in hot pursuit of the fiery demon, who was repelled, not killed, but repelled. And the fiery demon, the nature of black magic is, if you issue a spell and it doesn't, for some reason doesn't work, it comes back on the person who issued the spell. So the fiery demon came back and killed Sudakshina, and killed the priests who arranged the yajna for the Dakshina yajna, and then completely destroyed Kashi, or the city of Varanasi. So there's a good lesson. Don't mess with black magic. Especially if you're a devotee. Anybody shouldn't. Bad thing for demons too. So, although you do things like sometimes it seems that Brahma does, you're very expert. You make loopholes that it doesn't harm anybody except the bad people. Then he goes on saying that you're prideless. When King Chitraketu came to visit you and said some words that were insulting, you didn't become disturbed at all. It just shows your pridelessness. And then he refers to some incident that's not from the Bhagavatam, but there was one incident where Lord Shiva asked Krishna for a benediction. and the benediction that he asked Krishna for was that he could become greater than Krishna. And in Sanatana Goswami's commentary, he says that Lord Shiva knew the humility of Krishna. If he asked Krishna, let me become your devotee, Krishna wouldn't have agreed, oh, become my devotee, you're so great, how could you become my devotee? So he said the opposite, let me become greater than you. So that was Krishna's answer, very well, you can become my devotee. Because I consider my devotee to be greater than me. Which comes up later on with Prahlad, the glorification of Prahlad. Says you're given the powers of to grant liberation by Lord Vishnu. This is how much he favors you. And you're also fixed in a trance of devotion for Lord Vishnu, always appearing totally detached from the material world, like an insane person is detached from the material world. But this is not because you're crazy, it's because you're absorbed in a trance of meditation upon the Supreme Lord. In fact, when I first came here, I saw the whole exhibition. You were just in that very same mood. You're such an exalted devotee that by your mercy, many other persons have also become devotees. You're very generous and you're very kind in giving your compassion to others. So Narada's really into it, glorifying Lord Shiva, and he says, your consort, Uma or Ambika, she is actually Krishna's sister. And it's because of the favor that Krishna has upon his sister that you keep her as your constant companion, even though you're a fully self-satisfied personality. So how is it that Ambika or Uma is the sister of Krishna? So from the I'm going to run out of time. From the pastime of Krishna's appearance, if you read very carefully in the 10th canto, early chapter, and 2nd and 3rd chapter, there's a description of at the time of Krishna's appearance in Mathura, in the prison house of Kamsa, simultaneously Krishna appears as one of twins of Mother Yasoda. Read it carefully. It's there, right in Prabhupada's purport. When Mother Yasoda gave birth, she gave birth to twins. The first child, one of the children that was born was a female, and that the female that was carried by Vasudev back to the prison house of Kamsa, that Kamsa tried to smash by dashing to the ground, and up in the air flew the sister of Krishna. And the names of the different goddesses are mentioned. Not Yogamaya. But Uma and Ambika and Durga, and known by different names in different places within India, but the representation of Krishna's illusory energy appeared as the sister of Krishna. So Krishna is very kind upon his sister. She became the wife of, or the consort of Lord Shiva. So Narada is saying that because Yogamaya was asked by Krishna to transfer Balaram from the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini. And the sister of Mother Yasoda's daughter was these other forms, the many-armed form goddess. So I'm getting into too much detail of telling stories. That takes time. So after hearing after hearing these glories of Narada spoken about Lord Shiva, Lord Shiva protests, we're going to run out of time. So Lord Shiva's response is going to take about a half an hour, and we have 15 minutes, and I guess I'll have to save it for tomorrow. Basically, he starts off by saying, this is all very painful to hear. I'll give a few of them. He says, Krishna is the Lord of those who are prideless, and I am the Lord of Ahankar. How can you compare us as equal? And it's not that just I'm the Lord of Ahankar. One might think the Lord of Ahankar, false ego, I'd be aloof from false ego, just be in charge of the thing. So, but I'm filled with the influence. I'm covered with so many designations, false designations. You've said, you are the Lord of the universe. I'm not the Lord of the universe. You bestow liberation. I don't bestow liberation. These are all these things. You are the, you grant devotion to Lord Vishnu. So these are just powers that are given by Lord Vishnu. Each of these things that you've said, I do those services, but it's Lord Vishnu. But I'm covered by these designations. I actually think, yeah, I'm giver of liberation, and I'm covered by these designations. And you glorified me by saying that I'm so powerful that I bring about the devastation of the universe. But do you know how bad I feel when it's time for the cosmic annihilation and I have to destroy everything? I'm so ashamed. How do you think this makes me feel? And you say that Krishna favors me, then why does he engage in battle with me? When he came to take the Parijata flower and Indra wanted to stop him, Krishna fought with me. And when this same incident with Usha and Aniruddha, Krishna fought with me. And so many other situations, Krishna is favoring me. He mentions the situation with Samba. Krishna wanted an excellent son. It's my arrogance. I'm so much ashamed that my worshipable Lord comes and humiliates me by worshipping me for a benediction. He mentions the instruction that Krishna gave to appear in the material world and create a philosophy that's speculative and turns people against me. Mayavad philosophy. And what kind of service is that? How much does he favor me, asking me to do something like that? And this liberation that I give, and my wife also gives, it's scorned. It's repulsive to the devotees. But Krishna's decorating me with all these things that are just bad. How does he like me? And then I want to end with this, because he's now going to redirect Narada to Vaikuntha. Therefore, O best of Krishna's associates, do not think me as a recipient of his compassion. Rather, those who have obtained the essence of his mercy are the residents of Vaikuntha. they have given up everything as worthless straw. This very same, this follows very closely to the description of the glories of Maharaj Amrish. He saw everything as like stone. He had opulences that were inconceivable, and he just saw it as insignificant and meaningless. Worshipping their dear Lord Hari in pure devotion, they have no respect for the desirable achievements of this world. So this is one of their glories. These residents of Vaikuntha will not even glance at material perfections. The second one is, those devotees have abandoned every kind of false pride. They have attained the world beyond the material modes. And that which is Satchitananda, full of eternity, knowledge, and bliss, which is devoid of all fear. The residents of Vaikuntha have such Satchitananda bodies and may avail themselves of the supreme opulence of Lord Hari. They have Satchitananda powers, powers equal to his, but the residents of Vaikuntha do not like to accept such equality with the Lord. The residents of Vaikuntha are satisfied simply to worship Lord Hari with devotion. They travel freely wherever they want. This is an important item. They go here and there to give protection to other devotees, helping to awaken devotion in others and give protection to other devotees. And Narada is one example. Actually, Narada is a Vaikuntha resident, and he goes here and there, and he's delivering people from material existence and serving the Lord in very, very confidential ways. So I'm going to read one paragraph from the purport. These eternally liberated Vaikuntha Vasis are always helping others. Acting in the material world, they protect sincere persons from misunderstanding the principles of devotional service and thereby from falling down and being punished by the agents of Yamaraj. The Vaikuntha Vasis encourage the descent of advanced devotees into saintly families. They work for the increased prosperity and influence of those devotees and render unseen assistance to the devotees' preaching, by which more and more conditioned jivas are brought back to Krishna consciousness. Anyway. And when they do that, they're not implicated in the laws of karma like we are. Anyway. I'll continue tomorrow morning. Some nice glorifications of the residents of Vaikuntha. Okay, so we have 5 minutes. Tomorrow, I guess we'll complete this glorification of going to Vaikuntha, and there's a very, very wonderful thing that happens as Narada starts to head for Vaikuntha. Lord Shiva takes him by the hand, sits him down, pulls him to the side, speaks very softly to him and says, "I'm going to tell you a secret that's very confidential. And I don't want Uma to hear this. But there are persons even more confidential than the goddess of fortune, her good friend." So he starts describing some other like Vaikuntha qualified personalities that even exceed the goddess of fortune in receiving the Lord's mercy tomorrow morning. Stay tuned. Okay, so any discussion? Yes.
They are beyond the material world, they are liberated, they are transcendent. So it's trying to understand what they are different from.
You're trying to understand
how it's different from what we say, getting liberated by only by worshipping Vishnu, to get liberated beyond the material.
What's the difference in the position of the residents of Shiva Loka and the residents of Vaikuntha Loka? In the glories that it's coming up in this next section, but their attachment to the Supreme Lord Vishnu is not the same. Their intimacy with the Supreme Lord Vishnu is not the same, and there is a big issue in each of these scenes how often he's accessible to them. So in Vaikuntha he's always there. In this situation, when Lord Sankarshan receives the worship of Lord Shiva, as was the complaint of Indra and the complaint of Brahma, he just disappears. So the residents of Vaikuntha, they're always seeing the Supreme Lord. At least that's the statement that's going to be made by Lord Shiva. And as he's saying, they're completely prideless. They have no interest in material things. Of course, the residents in Shiva Loka, they're neutral, but in the positive sense, the residents of Vaikuntha, their detachment is even stronger. They can be in the environment where there are material things and not regard them at all beyond neutrality, due to their more intense attachment for the personality of Godhead. Nice question. Anything else? It's time for RTM. Yeah?